All right, agenda item number 8. Report and possible discussion on legislative update by Matt Phillips, Legislative Governmental Affairs Manager. Matt?
Good morning. This is my usual post-session legislative update, and usually when I give it, the legislature is no longer in session, which is great, and everybody's happy. Obviously, that's not the case right now. Many of y'all that have seen the news know that they are back in special session. Not a very productive special session right now, but they are in session. I'll start by talking a little bit about the special. I won't spend a ton of time on it because it doesn't really relate to us. I'll go through some of the things that passed during the regular session, and then I'm going to end by doing a recap of the sunset process and how we're working to implement all of the recommendations that came out of that. So on the special, these are the things that are officially on the call right now. So the governor sets the agenda for the special session. Anything that's in the call can be considered. Members can file bills on any number of subjects, including football conference realignment, but they cannot be acted upon if they are not in the governor's call. So right now, these are the things that are officially in the call. Now pay attention to a couple specific things. The election integrity bill and the legislative branch funding. Those are really kind of the two key things that caused the need for a special session. At the end of the regular session, the Democrats staged a walkout on the last day to pass bills, causing the election integrity bill to fail because they did not have a quorum to be able to pass it. And in a very much you like that, watch this moment, the governor forced them to come back for a special by vetoing the legislative branch funding in the budget. In the budget is the only bill where the governor has line item veto authority. Everything else, it's either veto or pass. But in the budget, he can veto sections of it, and he vetoed what's called Article 10. That's the article that funds not really the salaries of the legislators because they only make $7,200 a year and are part-time, but it does fund all of the salaries and benefits of the staff. And all of the district office leases and just everything that they're able to do. So if the legislature does not figure out a way to restore legislative branch funding, which will only happen if they also do something with the election integrity bill, the legislative staff and the legislative branch won't have funding as of September 1st. So that's kind of the real meat of the thing. I do think that if they're able to get a deal on the election bill and then restore legislative branch funding, the rest of this stuff may fall off. They may not do it, and they may just move on. But if not, I think if they end up having to call subsequent special sessions because of the fact that several of the Democrats have gone to D.C. and caused them to not have a quorum or be able to conduct business, I think that they'll continue to try to force all of these things through. So it'll be interesting to see how the next several days go, or next several weeks. The special session ends on August 8th, so he would then have to call another one to force them back again. Yes, sir. There will be a special session on redistricting, but that will be in the fall. It'll be in October, November. They've got to wait to get the census data in order to do that, but there will be one for sure. They won't have a choice on that either. So that's that. And obviously nothing in this really affects us. I'm monitoring the special, seeing stuff that gets filed. If stuff gets added to the call, we may become interested, particularly if they add public funds for lobbying. That's something that does affect us, so we'll be watching that if it does get added to the call. It's been rumored that it may. And I think I lost my ability. Oh, there we go. Okay. Just basic statistics. You know, these are not what you wouldn't expect coming out of the session where they had to deal with COVID and snowpocalypse. There were less bills passed than there have been in previous sessions, and we kind of expected that. They had a lot to deal with. So again, none of this is surprising. 16% down from 20% or 19% from the previous two sessions, which, I mean, depending on where you sit, the less they pass, the better. Very quiet session for water, and we talked about this throughout the entirety of the session. There's very little done on the waterfront, no pun intended, so we didn't really expect a ton to come out of it. These are some of the things that came out. House Bill 2225 just deals with the Texas Water Trust trying to get more water into the water trust or promote donations. 997 would only affect us if we ever have a rate case at the PUC, but it allows for an interlocutory appeal if a rate is found adverse to the public interest. That's a TWCA priority bill and one that we supported. And then 2154, again, only if we go before the PUC. They've got 5 commissioners now instead of 3, and a lot of that came out of the Snowmageddon stuff where they remade what the PUC is going to look like in the future. Groundwater, nothing. I mean, really nothing. Almost every groundwater-related bill, including loser pays and some of the permitting tweaks, they all died. So this is the only thing that is somewhat related to groundwater, the Produce Water Consortium, and that's an effort to try to create a water source out of oil and gas wastewater. And this will be more of a study effort going forward. I think it's generous to call that a groundwater bill, but it's probably the closest thing to a groundwater bill that passed this session. Everything else did not make it. Transparency, you know, always a topic that we pay attention to. 1225 just is a kind of a response to COVID. It allows public entities to kind of relax some of the open records requirements, dates, deadlines. If you're working remotely and in a pandemic and not able to be in the office, you still have to comply, but it just gives you some relaxed ability to do it. We actually never had a problem with this. We were able to handle open records requests even when we were out of the building and complete them in the times that we're supposed to do them. But I guess, you know, this is a tool that we can use if we ever have to. 1154 requires certain political subdivisions to put information on their website. That's really aimed at smaller districts like MUDs and SUDs, that they have to put their board member information when they hold elections, all that kind of stuff. If they have a general manager, the name and bio of that person, this is all stuff we already do. So we comply with that already. Back on transparency, let me back up on that. Let's talk a little bit about what didn't pass. I think everybody, including me, expected the legislature to pass bills that would have allowed the possibility of more virtual meetings. A lot of us thought coming out of COVID, particularly for some of these boards like regional planning boards, flood planning boards, they might create some allowances to allow for more virtual meetings, but that didn't happen. There were several bills filed, and I think there were arguments on both sides. There were some that thought allowing continued virtual meetings might be used as a way to keep the public out, whereas others argued, well, you do these virtual meetings, people don't have to travel, they're more likely to attend. And there was just never agreement on which one it was, and so they ended up not passing any of those, which, again, was a surprise to me and a surprise to a lot of the folks in the TWCA community. We really expected that they would move some of those, but they didn't. Eminent domain, most of 2730 really relates to private use of eminent domain, which does not affect us. There were some tweaks to the Landowner's Bill of Rights, which we'll have to comply with because we post that on our website, as all public entities are required to do. Senate Bill 7026 will affect public entities that have the power of eminent domain. Essentially, what it does is right now, there's kind of a list of activities of things that you have to do in order to show progress towards implementing a project if you take property with eminent domain. And right now, you only have to do two of those things. This increases the number of activities you have to do to three from two. However, and this was kind of a nod to entities like us that may acquire property and have to hold on to it for long periods of time because of permitting or how long projects take, there is an exemption in that bill for projects that are in the state water plan being implemented by a water district or river authority. So we were able to at least include that to give us some flexibility. Again, eminent domain is not a tool that we seek to use very often and hope to never use anyways. Contracting and employment. So a couple that I'll get you to pay attention to here. House Bill 692 relates to retainage, and this is a bill that's been filed about four sessions in a row, and it has died the last three for lack of ability to get some agreement between entities like us and contractors. What it does is it limits retainage to 5%. Currently, right now, we use 10%. That's the practice that we have. And so what we were able to do is negotiate some agreed-to language that basically sets a floor. So projects that cost below $5 million, you can still withhold 10% retainage. Those above $5 million, it will be capped at 5%. However, due to some nifty negotiation by us and LCRA and some others, there is an exemption to all of that for projects associated with dams and reservoirs. So we will still be able to withhold 10% on those larger type projects, a la Allen's Creek, or those bigger ones that we do that involve construction and or maintenance of a dam facility. And then 1118, this one is directly going to affect y'all. So right now, BRA staff has to do cybersecurity training, and we are now going to extend that to the officers of our organization. So you guys are going to get to do the same cybersecurity training that we do. We have an in-house program. It will be sent to you. We're working out the details of how we're going to do that. But basically, you'll get kind of an email link. You'll go on. You'll sit through it like us. You'll answer the questions, and it'll send a certificate that you've done it, and that way we can keep it on file. And you'll do it annually. You're welcome. Operations, I'll talk 600 first before 3. 600 is really very simple. It requires TCEQ to keep an inventory of dams controlled by river authorities. In all honesty, this is information that TCEQ already has. They're just going to put it in a database that's on their website. So they'll basically send us a form. We will send them information on all three of our dams, including how we maintain them. Just, again, basic information that, for the most part, they already have. They're just going to collect it in one place. This is really out of response to, you know, the dam failure issues that GBRA had several years ago, and they just want to see who controls what dams, how they're being maintained, do you have funding to maintain them, all those, all that type of stuff. So that's what will be in there. There is exceptions for information that could pose a security threat, so none of that will be on there. And then Senate Bill 3 was the big electric reform bill that came out of Snowmageddon. And 99% of it is related to electricity, but there's that small 1%. It's about two sections of the bill that relate to water. And essentially what they require is you to have a plan to maintain operations during an extended power outage of a water facility. Initially, the way the bill passed the Senate, it was real broad, meaning that it could have applied to any one of our facilities. And, you know, while we are on the page of trying to maintain operations during an outage, there was a potential that it could apply to facilities that it might not need to apply to. Now, luckily for us, both the Senate author and Senator Schwertner and the House author and Chairman Patty were very gracious and open to allowing us and other water providers come into them, help explain to them what we thought should be applicable under the bill and what maybe shouldn't, because what we wouldn't want to do is spend our customers' money providing backup power to things that may not need to be in operation during that type of event. You know, you need to apply it to the things that really do need to be operating. For us, that is primarily, if not solely, going to be the East Williamson County Regional Water Treatment System, which prior to Senate Bill 3, our folks in Brad's shop and in Blake's shop were already working on plans for continued backup power. So we'll just continue what we were already doing and do it in compliance with the timelines that Senate Bill 3 lays out in order to have a plan filed with TCEQ that says how we're going to maintain power during an extended outage. So again, it was something that we were already going to do. Now, obviously, all water entities will be required to do it, so we'll comply. Yes, sir.
Do the wastewater treatment plants already have backups?
Yes.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Matt, when will that plan be due? When will the plan be due to the TCEQ?
I think the plan's due next year, March 22. Yeah. And then you've got to implement, you've got to have in the plan your timeline for actually implementing it or putting it in place as part of that. All right, so that kind of covers all the different things that a lot of the kind of the other ancillary bills that passed. There are others, you know, this is an exhaustive list. After every session, I get with our legal folks. We go through all the different stuff that passed. Anything that needs policy amendments or things like that, you will see. You'll see those in September, used to be October, because that's when we usually bring policy changes to y'all. So you'll see those whenever we get them all together. So let's talk about sunset. I want to kind of do a recap of the entirety of that process, how it went into our actual sunset bill, and then where we are going forward. And I'll start by saying, it's always kind of the favorite thing to say as a sunset person, and they actually tell you this when they walk in the door. We're not here to tell you what you do well. That's not our job. We're here to tell you ways that you can be better. And so, you know, I think at times you see audits where they talk about the greatness of your organization and then say, yeah, you can maybe do this better. That's not how sunset's designed. And they make that very clear when they come in. Our review process lasted from June basically to January, if you count from when Sunset came in the door to when our Sunset report was approved by the Sunset Commission. Obviously, we had a bill, so it lasted longer than that all the way into the session, but in terms of the review process, that was the extent of it. Sunset staff was very good to work with, very professional, very thorough, but when we needed extra time to produce things, which wasn't very often, they were very accepting of that. They gave us leeway when we needed it, so we appreciated that. It started off with a ton of meetings. We had meetings with departments, meetings with individuals, meetings with sub-departments, with the Sunset staff, where they would just pepper us with litanies of questions. We would do basic departmental presentations to show them what we do, but they would also just kind of give us questions, requests for information, which I'll get into here in a second. They also met with specific areas like treatment operations in the lake. So they met with every facet of our organization, every department from top to bottom. What came out of those meetings was what's called these RFIs, and we would get these RFIs every Friday, essentially. And we always look forward to them on Fridays. And, you know, basically there were sets of questions which below them had sub-bullet questions with sub-questions and sub-questions and more sub-questions. And, you know, they basically, it essentially led to the production of just gargantuan amounts of information. And I'll take a moment here to thank the staff at BRA that worked on that stuff. So David Thompson and his folks, and Michelle and them, Brad and his folks, Laura Lee and her folks, the Basins, Mike, all those guys, the amount of work that they had to do to produce the information was a ton. And it took up a lot of time. You got to think, particularly for people that have other jobs to do, you know, that are, you know, running basins and reservoirs and treatment ops and everything else. And you've got Laura Lee's folks working our legal contracts and all that, and they're having to take the time to fulfill these RFIs. So I think our staff did an amazing job in making sure that we got Sunset what they wanted, got it to them very promptly and efficiently. And I can't thank them enough for the job that they did. Again, considerable staff time spent on those. The Sunset report that was produced contained very minimal recommendations. And if you've ever seen a Sunset report before or are familiar with the process, what you want to come out of a Sunset report is a real short report. You don't want it to be long. You don't want 15 sections worth of problems. We had three. And in all honesty, we really only had two, because one of these sections was across the board recommendations that they make for every entity they review. So you can almost say that doesn't really count, because they were going to do those anyway. So in all, we had a very short report with very minimal findings. They initially adopted our report in January, and then we had a sunset bill, obviously House Bill 1570, which concluded the across-the-board legislative recommendations that was passed, signed by the governor. And then we will be up for sunset again in advance of the 2033 session. So that tells you how extensive of a process it is. They only do it every 12 years. So that will be the next time that we go through this. So it'll actually be in 2032 in advance of the 2033 session. So let's talk about the two different sections of our Sunset report. You have statutory recommendations and you have management recommendations. The statutory recommendations are what are called the ATBs, or across the boards. That's what ended up in House Bill 1570. As we've discussed previously, we were already doing most of this stuff. We already allowed public testimony. We already do board member training. We already have a complaint tracking system. We already have a policy that separates staff and day-to-day and board policymaking responsibilities. The only thing we don't have is a grounds for board member removal policy. Like I said, with all of our policy changes, you will see that in September. We will bring one that essentially just mirrors the legislative language, so what's in our statute now. It'll just say the exact same thing, and y'all will be asked to put that probably in our bylaws, is where you all will adopt that into. We'll probably bring a policy on public remarks at board meetings, because even though we've done that as a practice, it's not in our policies. So we'll just put language in there that we allow public remarks at every single board meeting, and have for decades. The management recommendations are the things that did not go into our sunset bill, but we still have to do them. So we're still required to implement them. The first section dealt with project management and implementation. And in all honesty, David Collinsworth would tell you this, we asked Sunset to look at this. We know that we have to implement and put in place a ton of projects over the next several years. We wanted help. We wanted recommendations. We wanted outside eyes looking at our project implementation process and project management process and telling us what we could do better. And so they've given us some things to do, many of which we'll adopt as practices. One of the more important ones in here is providing information on project progression and expenditures. So our goal with that, and we're still working on it, is to essentially create a website that has all of the different projects we're working on, where you can go to the basin by location, see each project, see where it is in its life cycle, find information on it. So that's something that we're going to do to implement that recommendation. On the purchasing side, 99%, if not 100% of this will be adopted through the adoption of procedures that we will put in our purchasing procedure. A bunch of this we're already working on doing. And in total, we expect to have all of this implemented well before the end of this year, would be our goal. So what's next? So again, working on implementation, BRA staff and board will implement all of the different legislative and management recommendations. Y'all's role would be, if we have to bring policies to you, we'll bring them for you to adopt, and we'll do that in September. Staff will work on any procedures, such as the purchasing ones, that need to be put in place. And then we will be revisited by two agencies this time.
in the fall of 2022. And that will be the Sunset staff and then the state auditor staff. And they both have a different role. The Sunset staff will look at whether or not we've implemented the across-the-board legislative recommendations that were in House Bill 1570, which by the time they get here, we will have done. And then the state auditor's office staff will look at our compliance with the management recommendations, which are the non-statutory, and they will see if we have put policies and procedures in place to make sure that we are complying with what they've asked us to do there. So that's the process. And again, there's a good reason and breathing a sigh of relief that we don't go through it except once every 12 years. And we're happy to be done with it. Again, I will say this, and I'm not just saying it to be nice. Sunset staff was very good to work with. You know, I know that it could have been a lot worse. You know, it could have been very adversarial, but it certainly was not. And it was a process that I'm glad we're through, and, you know, we'll implement these things and move forward. And I think that's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know that was a lot.
I don't see any questions, Matt. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.